I wonder how many of you know the name Matthew Fox? Does that name ring a bell for a couple of you, several of you? He's a former Roman Catholic priest, a Dominican, who, because of his expansive spirituality, was kicked out of the church. Almost 50 years ago, he embraced feminist theology. He called God Mother, for God's sake. Can you believe it? And instead of original sin, he talked about original blessing. He later founded in California what he called the Center for Creation Spirituality. I knew a guy who went and studied with him. Clearly a very open-hearted, intelligent, and creative soul. Years ago, I read an essay about Matthew Fox and the various creative ways that he was practicing and sharing his spirituality. And I still remember what he said to an interviewer after he came out of a Native American sweat lodge that he had been inside with that heat and that, how do you describe it, deeply physical and spiritual practice. And as he came out of this heat and he was breathing in the cool air, this interviewer asked him if there was anything that he took as a lesson from that experience, and he said two words, more joy. And that's what the whole essay was about. And that has stayed with me, more joy. In this month, when we're reflecting on comfort and discomfort, and in these seasons of spring and Easter, when the invitation is to be looking around for signs of new life, that sounded like a sermon to me, more joy. Who among us couldn't use more of that? So that was early this week my working title for today, until I Googled it. And I discovered that more joy has become a meme. You can find it on stickers and on flowery social media posts. More joy, more joy. And on spirituality blogs. There's even a company now called More Joy that sells expensive t-shirts. And they branched out. You can find this online. The one that popped up in the images, Google images, just said sex on the front of the t-shirt. So I guess that's what I get for using the Google. And I'm not giving up on more joy, because you know we need as much of it as we can get, right? But we don't need the shallow version. There's plenty of that already. We need more than a bumper sticker or a t-shirt. We need real lived and embodied experiences of joy. And there are multiple ways to get them. I'm sure you already have found your own ways. And I wonder if anybody wants to say out loud how you open yourself up to joy.
Dancing.
Say it again, I'm sorry.
Grandchildren.
Children. Travel.
Playing Scrabble.
Playing the piano. Daffodils. Singing?
Singing.
Dogs.
Dogs.
Poetry.
Poetry.
Midnight walk in the woods at Minnie Kenny.
Doing art.
Doing art. Thank you. And if you feel like it, if you didn't share something now and you want to, share it with somebody at coffee hour. You don't need to hear this because many of you are already doing it, but one way I know is giving yourself, to access more joy, is giving yourself permission to do what you love, right? To celebrate and savor these everyday moments of life, like this one. Do you remember back during COVID, not that long ago, we couldn't be here at this hour on Sunday? And now, look, we've come through that difficult time, and here we are. That's something to be joyful about, isn't it? There's an old way to joy that I'm thinking about today. It's still around. You can find it at the margins of the church and also at the margins of society. It's practiced oftentimes by people who don't fit into neat boxes, whether in faith traditions or in the wider culture. It invites the practice, like what some of you described just now, of living more fully into life. It also calls us to resist the forces that stand against life. And the name for this is mysticism. Some of you know that word, right? A mystic is anyone who has a personal or direct experience of the divine, or anyone who seeks after that. Jesus was a mystic. Teresa of Avila was a mystic. Rumi was a mystic. Mary Oliver, a contemporary mystic. John O'Donohue, another contemporary mystic. And some of us, we are mystics too, aren't we? Too often, mystics are seen as eccentric outcasts or criticized as navel-gazers, at least in their own time. St. Francis was a mystic. He found the holy in the natural world and all its creatures. He wrote a praise song called Canticle to the Sun that sang praises to Brother Sun and Sister Moon, to his siblings, fire and water, to Mother Earth and Sister Bodily Death. And the hymn we sang at the start, we call All Creatures of the Earth and Sky Now, that comes from Francis's Canticle to the Sun. The inspiration for my sermon today comes from the feminist theologian Dorte Sola and her book called The Silent Cry, Mysticism and Resistance. And one of the chapters is called As If We Lived in a Liberated World. So I didn't come up with that on my own. Sola asserts that mysticism desires to get away from the privatization of joy, happiness, and oneness with God. Also, the capitalization of those things, like t-shirts. Several of you told me, like I was talking to our children about earlier, about your experience of this past week's solar eclipse. You've described the awe and the wonder you felt as the moon slid in front of the sun, turning it black, and the blessing of gathering with others in stillness as our earth in mid-afternoon turned dark. And then the unabashed joy you felt with others when the light started to return. The cheering and the hugging and the sense of oneness this evoked. One of you at our board meeting last Wednesday put it this way: it was the most spiritual thing I have ever experienced. So what do you do after an experience of that awe and that oneness? Many of us long for these types of mountaintop experiences, but how do you live once you have had one? Once you have tasted the way we humans are meant to live, open to and in relationship with each other. Dorte Sola addresses this in the words I put at the top of the order of service. Mystical experience is bliss, and simultaneously it makes one homeless. It takes people out of the home they have furnished for themselves into homelessness, as it did to the young Gautama, later known as the Buddha. In his life, Jesus also experienced this kind of homelessness. In the gospel, speaking to a man who said, "I want to follow you," Jesus warned, "Foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." Talk about comfort and discomfort. They go together, don't they? The mystic experience can bring you bliss and open you up to the fact that we are all siblings and kin. But you know, we live in a society that doesn't much believe this and doesn't act like it. No wonder we can feel homesick, adrift, alone. You know what I'm talking about? So it's understandable. I'm having fun with this today, but it's completely understandable how we can tend to want to stay in the shallow end, to buy that t-shirt that says more joy, to pacify oneself with something like a pumpkin spice latte, when we are actually hungry and thirsty for much more, right? I know about this directly. I come home sometimes tired, and I stand at the kitchen counter mindlessly eating, knowing that it's not going to satisfy, but doing it all the same. And isn't this why we have faith communities like this one? Because we need places where we can share our experiences of the holy, where we can share our hungers and our longings, where we can be reminded of what we tend to forget. That we are here on this earth to be religious, and I mean that in a good way and not necessarily a churchy way. To be filled with the spirit of life, ecstatic with the wonder of it all, so we do act like the creatures of the divine that we are. So we do remember that we belong to each other. And I wonder about and I worry about those who aren't grounded in some kind of community or tradition. There are certainly lots of interesting new ways of finding spiritual community these days, and we can learn from them. The church isn't the only one, and it doesn't work for everybody, but I remain grateful and hopeful for the church because I know that our human hunger for a holy place has not diminished. That hunger is all around. And we are here to feed others and to be fed ourselves. This is what we are about. And I have to say, what many of you know, the spiritual journey doesn't come easily. It's not all rainbows and unicorns. Inevitably, it requires a battle with one's own ego, which job it seems to be to put up defenses against the mystery. You hear this at the end of Goethe's poem, The Holy Longing. And so long as you haven't experienced this, to die and so to grow, you are only a troubled guest on the dark earth. And so long as you haven't experienced this, to die and so to grow, you are only a troubled guest on the dark earth. What needs to die? Our belief in rugged individualism, that part of ourself, our ego that sees the self as separate and alone and apart. Our desire to control everything. Life teaches us again and again, some of these things are just not possible, right? But we can persist. Growth does usually involve some kind of death. And these little deaths are going to be uncomfortable. But beyond them is the promise of more abundant life. And we know something about this, don't we? That death is a part of life, that what is temporal is part of what is eternal. Just like spring always follows the winter. The mystic perspective offers the holistic view that befriending death and the shadows will open in us a larger space for joy. That there's a relationship between those things. You know, we live in challenging times, and we live in a culture where consumerism and rationalism and cynicism are the dominant forces. No wonder we can feel lifeless and discouraged and separate from one another. And still, we get these blessed moments, don't we, when we glimpse a different reality. When we look up at the stars, when we are transported by a once, perhaps in a lifetime, planetary, it's not really a planet, it's the Earth and the Moon, but it's a heavenly event because it's up there in what some people call the heavens. When we look into the eye of a friend or a stranger, and we remember who we are and whose we are, that we are not strangers on this earth. The invitation always is to wake up to this wonderful reality that mystics, both ancient and modern, are always pointing to. This mystery that is accessible to us all. As Denise Levertov confesses, days pass when I forget the mystery, problems insoluble, and problems offering their own ignored solutions. They jostle for my attention, they crowd its antechamber along with a host of diversions. My courtiers wearing their colored clothes, caps, and bells. And then once more the quiet mystery is present to me. The throng's clamor recedes. The mystery that there is anything at all, let alone cosmos, joy, memory, everything, rather than void. And that, O Lord, Creator, Hallowed One, you still, hour by hour, sustain it. What if we would act as if we lived in a liberated world? What if? Amen.